Athletic joining us.
Hello, guys. The intent that he had in putting this staff together will overrule all of that, no pun intended. Yeah, you've got to get bigger and bolder every time, right?
Call Mitch. Call Mitch. Call Mitch. Call Mitch.
Mitch Sherman of The Athletic. We call him on Mondays at this time and say, hello, Mitch.
Hello, John. How are you?
Not bad. Not bad at all.
I'm here too, Mitch, by the way.
Oh, I knew you were going to say that.
All right, good. I just didn't hear your voice. Hi, Josh.
Hi.
I asked this question earlier of Jack Mitchell, and it led to an interesting conversation. I'm curious if the Husker Brain Trust, the coaches, were asked or if we could give them some truth serum and tell us what they want scenario to play out, the scenario that they'd like. Would it be that Daniel Kalen is good enough to be the number two, or that Harburg is good enough to be the number two? Which scenario do you think they would like most to play out?
Well, I think Harburg probably is good enough to be the number two. They could go into a season and feel comfortable if he was the number two. And it would be – so what they would want, I think, because you would be maximizing the talent in your program, is if Kalen were to play at a level above Harburg, in part because – you have a constant with Heinrich and you know what he brings. And if Danny gets above that, then that's a positive. And then two, Harburg is the more versatile player and the player who can help you at another spot. And Danny Kalen's not going to, if you don't have him as your backup quarterback, then he's basically redshirting and, you know, it's a valuable year. It's not like a wasted scholarship, but Harburg can do more for you than just be the third string quarterback. If he's the guy who's in that number three spot, he can help you. Like we saw in the Minnesota game, he can help you on in other areas of the offense. And maybe they go and find somebody else to help at that position. But I think they want to have a good idea about how that shakes out after April 27th so they can make a decision about how to address the transfer portal. And if Harburg is the number three guy and they don't need him to take meaningful reps at quarterback, most likely, you know, barring a couple of injuries, then I think they have more freedom to explore some things and try to find a developmental player in the portal to add depth.
Yeah, Mitch, I was going to ask you that. If there's a world where the spring ball unfolding the way it has causes them to reevaluate what their plans were going to be going into the portal season, because I know I have always thought that they would add another player regardless. Like, is there a world where that doesn't happen anymore because they like what they have right now?
Well, I mean, there is that world, but I think that Kalen playing well in the spring and being a viable quarterback right off the bat early in his career, there's an argument to be made that that actually would enhance the options in the portal, that you could then go find someone who, because I don't think that the option in the portal in any scenario is to find someone who's going to come in and fight for the job this summer. I mean, it's really late in the process to try to win the quarterback job, to come in June and do that. And two, I just don't think that's the position that Nebraska's in. So if you know that you can bring in a young player, maybe someone who went somewhere for a year or two and would like a fresh start, but understands that they're going to have to go from the bottom up, and doesn't mind competing for a backup job, there will be guys like that in the portal, especially with NIL as it is. There will be players like that in the portal who are looking for not just playing time, but an opportunity to earn money. So I kind of subscribe to the belief that a good spring by Kalen gives you more flexibility in the portal because you can then look at Heinrich Harburg in a number of different ways.
And speaking of that spring portal, it's already open, yet Nebraska's spring game's not for a couple of weeks. By the time Nebraska finishes its spring football, that portal is basically going to be closed. Do you think that's a good or a bad thing that Nebraska's spring game is this late in the portal window process?
Well, you can always get players out of the portal after the April 30th date. It's just to go in. So I don't think it hurts Nebraska. I mean, it's not a great thing for players in the program who are on the fence about whether they want to go in. You might see some players go in before the spring game, you know, possibly as soon as tomorrow, which is the 10th practice out of 15 this spring. Maybe next week when spring is winding down and some depth things are more clear. If there are players who haven't progressed the way that they wanted through 12 practices or so in the spring, then the writing's on the wall. They can go in the portal, and that shouldn't be too disruptive for Nebraska. Where it would get disruptive is if, you know, you lose a first or second string, you know, frontline player, and then, you know, your spring is messed up in some way by that. Although even that scenario is like, okay, so you have to adjust something in the spring game, which doesn't count for anything other than just, you know, eyeballs on the, and it's another practice for the team and the fans. And I don't know that it would affect their viewing experience. So really it's not, I don't think it's a big thing, and I don't expect, and I talked to Matt Rhule a little bit about this on Thursday. He doesn't expect there to be a whole lot of churn either way. There are going to be some guys who leave, but as far as the high end of the roster players, it's unlikely, but there are always some surprises, and they're prepared for some surprises. And they also went into this spring with their eyes open to the fact that they scheduled the spring late. You know, it was a balancing situation, and they had to decide, you know, do we want the pluses of starting spring late after spring break or, you know, and deal with the fact that the portal is going to be open for the last five practices. And they thought that was the best option.
Hey, Mitch, you wrote about Donovan Raiola this morning for The Athletic as he enters now year three as the offensive line coach. I wonder how your view has evolved on him, maybe less year one to year three and more year two to year three, how you were feeling about him at this time a year ago versus what he has with that group and how he's done at this moment in time.
I think by this time a year ago, I felt like he was on solid ground. I maybe wouldn't have said that like in December or January of the last off season. But, you know, Matt Rhule had said enough about Donovan Raiola, and I'd heard enough from his players by the time we got to April of 23, you know, even with Dylan seemingly headed elsewhere at that point, you know, he wasn't committed to Georgia yet a year ago at this time, but he was on that track. I didn't feel like Donovan was on thin ice, anything like that. I really did believe, you know, it's been validated by the events of the last several months. You know, take Dylan out of the equation, just the events on with the offensive line, that he is a good fit with Matt Rhule, and they think alike. And Donovan Raiola's coaching style, while I don't think it was a good mesh in the last year of the Frost Joseph Whipple regime offensively, it is a much better fit for Matt Rhule and now Marcus Satterfield and Glenn Thomas and everything that they're doing on the offensive side. I feel like Donovan can really be Donovan. You see that at practices when we have these brief windows into what the team is. You can see it in his comfort level around the program. You know, even when he talks publicly now, I feel like he's just much more at ease and understanding how he fits into this thing. So, good, very good transition from year two to year three for him. And I think that started early in Matt Rhule's time. It's not something that, you know, they had to get through a full season on the field and then get his nephew in the fold before things looked up for Donovan. It was looking like it was going in a good direction as early as last winter.
Seems like this is one of Matt Rhule's bigger wins in the first, you know, year and a half or so, was turning around the narrative on this. Not that maybe he had set out to turn around a narrative on his offensive line coach, and certainly we could have all made misreads on his quality, but let's face it, there was a lot of skepticism around Donovan Raiola and why he was actually here and what his purpose was going to be. And for Matt Rhule to say, hey, he's the guy I'm keeping, and oh, by the way, they got better at that position, and it's something you wrote about today. It seems like this is one of the bigger wins that Matt Rhule has had in his young tenure.
Yeah, I think it's legitimately the most solid position on the offense. And I added up the starts that this group has got at the Power 5 level, you know, with Micah Mazuka and Ben Scott. There are starts in the Pac-12 and the SEC and the Big 12. And at the Power 5 level with the seven offensive linemen who started games, that's 152 starts, most of them at Nebraska. And that's, you know, that's 2.5 years of starting experience across the line, which is, you can say what you want about the kind of starting experience it is. And some people might say, well, what good is starting experience if they've played on losing teams? And okay, I'll listen to that. But I also think if you can't replace you can't replace the value that comes with a player like Bryce Benhart, a player like Ben Scott. They're both sixth-year seniors, and I don't think they have bad experience. You know, I don't think that the now Benhart struggled early in his career, but he turned a corner last season, and I think Justin Evans Jenkins came. Actually, I'm sorry, it's just Justin Evans. He has dropped the Jenkins. Justin Evans came a long way last season in starting five games. I think Henry Lutowski showed some strides. I think Teddy Prochazka has finally found footing in the program and is on a track to be healthy, knock on wood, and has made a jump from year three to year four. So it's good experience for the most part that they've got, and there's no other spot, not just on the offense, but there's no other spot on the team that can say that has that kind of experience. So while I'm not ready to say it's like the strength of the entire team, it is to me the most stable place on the offensive side of the ball.
Mitch, I know that Nebraska spoke at some point over the last few days about the emphasizing of the takeaways on the defensive side of the ball. Is that an area that you feel strongly will have an uptick in performance in 2024?
Well, we'll see. I mean, they lose some players who should have been pretty good at that last year. I think Luke Reimer, Nick Henrich, Quentin Newsome were all players who were experienced and you know, understood the importance of getting after the ball and trying to strip that thing out of there. I do think across the board that year two of the defense, it's just naturally a step that the defense as a whole would take in Tony White's system. There's so much emphasis in the first year on getting to the right spot, being in the right place, making the right reads as a defense, you know, creating the only way they can create the havoc that they do, which is like the central theme of that defense, is to understand it. And there's a lot to understand. So, and there were so many players going in and out too that added to, you know, not only were they trying to create chaos for the offense, I think there could have been a level of chaos that existed on the Nebraska sideline just because of how much was going on. So they did a really nice job of eliminating the chaos on their own side. And then I think now some of that becomes second nature. And one thing that they really will focus on, they already are, is just getting hands on the football, you know, going after it, making fundamental plays to strip it and break up passes and knock balls into the air so they can get interceptions. So I can't say, oh yeah, I think it's going to be one of the best turnarounds in the country, or they're going to triple their turnovers caused. But I do think that they'll have more hands on the ball, and you know, if they can get some bounces, it could be a significant uptick.
Quite often, when you're on the Twitter or X, as now the kids call it.
The kids don't call it that. You do.
Where you get those annoying commercials, and you know, as you're going through your timeline,
like
you have the ads.
Yeah.
And the
look
one
at this dishwasher
the
thing.
One that's been popping up the most for my timeline, I'm curious if it's doing it for you as well, is the University of Nebraska advertising spring game tickets. And it always throws me off, because when I see, you know, I'm just kind of conditioned, when I see a flash of red in the color, it's like, oh, no, big, something's happened with Nebraska athletics. I'm curious what it is. Mm-hmm. And I realize, oh, it's just another ad for the spring game. And I saw this morning that the spring game has sold just over 50,000 tickets, which I was a little surprised by. Usually we talk about this game being north of at least 70,000 in terms of attendance, and you know, we're only a couple of weeks out. Has the spring game lost some luster this year?
Maybe fans thought the South Stadium was coming down before the spring.
And they didn't want to be in it when it happened. I understand.
Right. Yeah, exactly. That would be a bad day. I mean, 50,000 is, yeah, this is not the situation where you sold it out in 48 hours. I mean, this isn't like volleyball day in Nebraska. I think with a first-year coach, you have that kind of excitement. People want to get out and see the coach, and that's happened really just about every time that Nebraska's changed coaches, which, you know, has been often over the last 20 years. So you've seen big crowds in those years. The other thing that brings out the crowds are intrigue at the quarterback spot. So I'm a little bit surprised, yeah, that the number's not a touch higher because of the Dylan Raiola factor. He's probably sold a lot of tickets, his presence right there, and maybe it would be 10,000 less if he had been at Georgia this spring. I mean, look, if they get 60,000 people, which if it's a nice day, they will. If they've sold 50-plus, then there's going to be a good walk-up. And people probably look at the numbers, too, and say, oh, I don't need to rush out and get tickets because there's still 20,000 available. So you can get them on Saturday after you see if it's, you know, going to be 60-mile-an-hour wind or whatever it might be, thunderstorms. It'll be a good crowd, and it'll be one of the better spring crowds in the country. So to me, it's kind of a non-issue on, hey, did the number drop a little bit from last year? I mean, maybe. Look, I mean, I think people also kind of just start to remember and figure out if there's not, like, that first-year coach factor, that the event is not all that exciting.
Yep.
And it's on TV. And, you know, Matt Rhule even said last week, like, we're going to be more vanilla, was his quote. Like, he said for a variety of reasons, and you can start to go through them. Like, there's scouting, you know, there's you don't want to have injuries. There's going to be a lot of players held out, veteran players. I mean, the last thing that you would ever want to do is get one of your starters hurt in the spring game. So even the ones who play are probably going to play a few series and then get out of the game and let the early enrollees and the walk-ons and down the line depth players take over. So, you know, how appealing is that for, you know, if you're not a diehard fan who comes to every game and every spring game? I don't know. It still sounds like a lot of people are going to be there.
Mitch Sherman of The Athletic. Mitch, thank you much for the time. Enjoy the rest of this beautiful week.
Same to both of you.
Thank you, Mitch.
Mitch Sherman joining us on the 42 Degrees, the Source Hotline. It's true.
He hit it.
It's nothing to sneeze at, but this is weird brag season.
Oh, yeah.
Where fan bases like to brag about, well, this is how much we love our team. Well, I love my team more than you love your team.
They're going to say behind the brag.
And we use
behind
it.
Behind the brag.
And we use the spring game as the thing that shows how much we really love the team, because it's true. The quality of the ball is bad. The quality, well, I shouldn't say bad. The quality of the ball is subpar.
Mm-hmm.
The quality of the entertainment is bad.
I think that...
very bad.
John, you were out in front of this years ago. You've long said, this is dumb, this is stupid. And I mean, people said...
It's dumb to anticipate this as something fun to do, because it's not.
You know that meme... Nick, you know this meme. It's the old guy standing up in front of, like, a group of people. He looks like he has overalls on. You know that meme?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, that's John saying, this isn't you calling you old. It was just the meme. Where it's like, the spring game has always been bad. And people agree with you now. People are on your side about this. I've come over to your side. Who cares? That's my view. Who cares?
I think if they want people to come, they should make it more of an event.
More of an event.
To make it more of a carnival kind of situation.
Wow. Less game, more carnival.
The game is an event, but it's not the main draw because who.
But seriously, the reason people go, I think it's twofold. One, it gives you an excuse to tailgate. People do love to tailgate, and I'm not knocking that at all.
Mm-hmm.
The other part is the weird brag. It's the opportunity to show off how this is how loyal we are.
Yeah, and that's something that you have never...
I've never bought into, because, listen, you don't have to.
Because you don't
Husker
like it.
Fan, you don't have to prove your loyalty to me anymore.
Well, no, and you also have said if you don't like the product, don't go. Like how it pissed you off for years at the Cubs fans. This isn't a Nebraska thing. You view this with all of your fan base, with all of your teams, rather. Why are you supporting them if they're not very good? Put your money where your mouth is. Nebraska fans don't operate in that way, and so you're
they
not.
Don't.
You don't get your rocks off. Sorry, I don't know if I'm allowed to say it. It's fine, Nick. But you don't. It's not a big deal for you if you know, a team fills up the stadium for spring ball. I think that people have just caught on. And I will say this. I think the football has actually gotten worse. When I was a kid, when you were certainly a kid, but even in, like, the Callahan era, there was some physicality, and, like, it felt like a real football game.
Sure.
Dare I say that when Jack Hoffman scored the touchdown – and Michael Severe lost his bet that day, and he lost actual money because it counted. I would say that is a really good dividing line of the spring game being something.
Oh, when it jumped the shark?
Yes, because it also wasn't on TV for a long time, and then it suddenly got on TV. And remember, Bob Diaco shows up, and they don't run the 3-4? Because they're worried about film. Like, bro, don't worry. They're going to pick you apart no matter what you do in the spring game. Your defense is going to suck.
Now, the fascinating one about this... that I would be curious to watch for I am curious to see what Dylan Raiola and Daniel Kalen look like throwing the ball on the regular.
In terms of just like dropping back and
sure,
throwing
just,
a football?
Yeah, and at least in a quasi-football sense.
Yeah.
Now, that curiosity will wane rather quickly after they've played a couple of drives. Like, okay, I've seen enough. Move on.
Yeah.
Right?
It's like, oh, it looks like Patrick Mahomes.
Uh-oh.
But it is interesting that, you know, in a place that really loves to show off how much they love their Huskers, that this year it just seems like it's more of a tepid response.
Aaron in Papillion says, I think the NBA All-Star Game and the Spring Game are very similar, just a pickup game at best.
Yeah. I don't understand the appeal of All-Star Games.
It's definitely a means to an end. It is just like, let's get this done so we can move on into the rest of the offseason.
And I'm not critical of the program for doing what they do.
You're talking about like inside the game?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't want to get anybody hurt.
No, of course not.
And if you're gonna really practice, if you're really gonna go for it, you're gonna do it behind closed doors.
You're gonna do what you did this weekend.
Exactly.
You'll do scrimmages. You'll do actual.
So you're not putting that stuff on film.
Yeah, you do actual real scrimmages, which they've already done.
Interesting though that they did it in a year where they raised the prices. The prices did go up.
What? Bidenflation has now come for spring game?
Oh yeah, Bidenflation came for the spring game. It used to be $10.
Are they $15 now?
Now it's $15 to get into the general seating and $25 for the club seats.
That's a 50% uptick in price, Nick.
Good
and
math.
Tickets for the kids used to be free. Now it's $5.
If the kids want to go to the spring game, they should get a damn job.
Wow. John goes left when Nick goes right? Many people are saying that I have not gone right, by the way. They're not saying that.
And by the way, where's the red carpet experience for the spring game?
Trev left. The red carpet experience is dead.
Did he take the kids with him?
I hope not, Nick. That might be illegal.
It is Texas. It is a big state. There's plenty of room.
Yeah, that'll be one of the things that I wonder about in my just weird brain. Will the red carpet experience die?
It would kind of be a tough look if it did.
Well, it annoyed the hell out of me that Trev was like, if the sales streak is going to end, it's going to end. And then he was like, except we're going to give away 3,000 tickets to little kids.
Yes, I know.
Which I never minded the kids getting them. I just didn't like that they kept calling it a sellout streak.
It's like Nebraska backed itself into a really weird corner by doing it, though.
I would agree, Nick.
You're like, yeah, no, it's a good thing, but if you take it away.
Mustache Adam says, Nick, not here for lazy millennials.
If they would spend less time on their iPads and their TikTok and more time pulling up their bootstraps.
Wow, can you believe this? What has happened to this studio?
I don't know. Things have gotten really weird in here. Well, let's put that theory to the test. Lane Kiffin just put out a tweet here moments ago.
Okay. Oh. Was he bitching about
gas
prices?
Apparently, famed country western star Morgan Wallen is doing a show at the at Ole Miss in the football stadium. And Lane Kiffin took a picture and tagged Morgan Wallen by basically implying that he is transferring to Ole Miss.
Nick, are you going to go to this concert? Seems like a person that you would love and enjoy. And
only if all the chairs are bolted down.
Nice.
Well, that's the funny part.
It is a football stadium.
Because of the comments so far under the tweet, lock y'all's upper windows, just bolt down the seats.
Nice.
Be sure to bolt those chairs down, bolt the chairs down, hide the chairs. Good thing you have bleachers and not actual chairs. So, yes.
That's the good part about going to stadiums is the seats are usually stuck in place.
That's fair.
Yeah.
By the way, I just need to know, what's the SIP?
It is...
Is that an acronym for...
I don't remember what it means.
Because every time Lane Kiffin talks about going to Ole Miss, he's talking about transferring to the SIP or being at the SIP.
State of Mississippi. I don't know.
Wouldn't
why.
That be SOP?
That'd be SOP.
Yeah. What does SIP stand for?
Maybe they didn't want to use SOP.
It is slang for Mississippi.
Oh, SIP.
Duh.
Oh.
Not short for Mississippi. Okay.
Yeah, duh. Duh, duh, duh.
It's like the morons who say SKRS.
Yeah. No, we like SKRS. And you know what else we like, John? 1620 the email, which you can sign up for right now at 1620thezone.com. Email. What about... Z-mail. It's the same amount of syllables. but it adds a Z to it.
How could you sign up for 1620 the email?
Well, you go to 1620thezone.com. It's pretty easy.
That's all you have to do.
Well, I mean, you have to scroll and you look for the part that says subscribe today to 1620 the email.
Oh, so and you look for what?
There's
subscribe today?
1620 the email. There's videos in there. I don't know if Happer going into the bathroom with the urine in the toilet is in there, but my goodness, if you have not gone to our YouTube page, I highly recommend giving this a watch. Happer was going to pour Mountain Dew in the toilet, but there was pee in there.
Spoilers, John.
Yeah, sorry. Who didn't blush? Who was this? Which coworker is this?
I don't know who didn't, but somebody didn't flush.
Oh my gosh.
Well, it's a dude, whoever it was. We know that.
That's true. Do we know that for certain?
Who are you implying did it, Nick? Alyssa?
How do we? Yeah.
Are you saying Alyssa went and did that and then didn't flush?
I think it sounds perfectly natural that a woman would do that to try to frame us and make us look bad.
Oh, interesting.
Oh, look at those dirty men. They never flushed their toilet knowing that Connor was going to go in there with a video camera.
Well, we know it wasn't our boss, Mark, and we know it wasn't Ed.
That's true. Mustache Adam says Tom Becca.
How do you know it wasn't Ed? Are you sure it wasn't Ed?
Adam says Tom Becca strikes again.
Damn it, Tom.
Tom, smile, Tom.
No, it was in the toilet. 1620 the email. Subscribe today at 1620thezone.com.